did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 137 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, again this week. Today, I have a great guest, Jeff Tippett. Jeff is from the Raleigh-Durham area, and he is a speaker, a professional speaker, who focuses on persuasive communications. He's got a new book coming out at the turn of the year in January called Unleashing Your Superpower. And it's all about, as I said, persuasive speaking. And we have a great conversation talking about, 10 points on how to be more effective and more persuasive as a speaker. And, as an attorney, we're trying to persuade somebody pretty much all the time, whether it be a judge, a jury, a mediator, opposing counsel, what have you. So we're always in that business. So I thought it'd be great to have Jeff on, and he doesn't disappoint. So I hope you enjoy this and get as much out of it as I did. So here is Jeff Tippett. Jeff Tippett, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for this opportunity to be a part of the conversation. I'm excited to talk.
I'm very excited to have you on the show today, Jeff. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
I appreciate this opportunity, Neil. I own Targeted Persuasion, which is a public affairs and communications firm. I spend about half my time there. I launched out to do political work and started this company as an entrepreneur at the worst time possible. I launched in October of an election year and just concerned, hey, can I make it or not as an entrepreneur? But fortunately, the first week of putting my shingle out, I signed a half dozen clients. And then within the first quarter of my company's existence, I signed this little company out of California called Airbnb, and they were my first international client to do public affairs work for them. So I spent about half my time with clients and strategy, and then about half of my time on stage speaking.
Interesting. Well, one of the reasons, or the reason, that I reached out to you to see whether or not you would be amenable to coming on the show was about your new book that you have coming out. Why don't you tell us first off about that book, what that's about, entails.
I'm excited about the book. It's been a year of my life of writing this. It's been my whole career understanding the material here, but it's been a year of my life writing it. I've finished all of my portion of it. Everything's with my editors and my publisher right now. It'll be released in January. The book is called Unleashing Your Superpower: Why Persuasive Communication is the Only Force You Will Ever Need. And in the book, my big statement that I make, my big bold statement, audacious statement, is that we all live or die based upon our ability to persuade.
Well, and that's exactly the pivot point here for this conversation, because, it doesn't take a genius, and I'm far from one, to recognize that attorneys, our primary audience, are always in the business of persuasion, even if they're not litigators, they're transactional attorneys, it doesn't really matter. You're always trying to persuade somebody to adopt your point of view or your client's point of view or the state's point of view. So you're trying to convince a judge, you're trying to convince opposing counsel, you're trying to persuade a mediator or a potential client or existing client. We're always trying to persuade somebody. So what's the key to being able to do that successfully, or is there a key?
Well, first of all, I'm I'm glad you're on board with the message. And it is true. Like it doesn't matter if you're a CEO, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're an attorney, or if you just don't want to live alone for the rest of your life, right? We all live or die based upon our ability to persuade. And the book is built around the backdrop here is the adoption that I did, international adoption of a baby from the country of Haiti that I processed this adoption during a time when Aristide's government was collapsing. Really? And during this experience, I talk about near-death haps. I talk about gun in my head, machetes. I talk about having to flee the city. But I also talk some about an internal struggle that I began to identify that was keeping me from accomplishing what I needed to accomplish in this adoption. You see, I thought that this whole country falling apart was my arch enemy in all of this. But what I learned through several instances was that my big enemy here was myself. And I was leaning more toward manipulation than persuasion. And I think when people understand like what manipulation is and what persuasion is, it really frees our minds to go and chase and to be advocates of persuasion.
That's really key. I like the concept because it's a slippery slope or a fine line between those two aspects. Manipulation versus persuasion. So help me to understand where that line is and what's the differentiator.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me frame this with the story. We reached a point in the adoption where my attorney from Haiti emailed me and said, Jeff, they're just not showing up to work. The office hasn't been open for several weeks here. Mm. At best, your adoption is on delay. There was a next government official that I needed to sign the documents. At best, your adoption is on delay. But he also said, Jeff, I think you should probably start to face the fact that your adoption may be over and this may not move forward. Well, Neil, to say I was deflated is an understatement. I mean, I was devastated. I'd already been over 3 or 4 times. I had met her. I had taken food over. I had cared for her. She was in an orphanage living at this point. I was already in love with her. And to have my attorney tell me it's probably over was extremely difficult to handle. So I went to bed depressed, woke up the next morning to figure out my plan. And Neil, here's what I decided I was going to do. I was going to fly over to Haiti, go back to Haiti, and every single day I was going to get up, walk down to the office that I needed to have the papers signed with my interpreter, hoping for some random reason someone would pop in. And I went through this daily, Neil, for about 2 weeks of walking there, optimistic, the sun coming up, leaving depressed that no one showed up that day until finally, Neil, one day someone did show up, the person who had the authority to sign this piece of paper that I needed to get my adoption back on track. And when he came in, you can imagine what I was going through, right? Picture like 2 weeks of being there in Haiti, very few English-speaking people to talk to, all this stuff bouncing around in my head, emotions galore happening because I'm already in love with this baby. And I explode on him. And basically, I'm just going on and on telling about the adoption, and he glassed over, and he told me no. And I had to pull back and think, like, what's going on, Jeff? What's happened here? Why has he told you no? And so I began to like draw on the limited knowledge I had of Haitian culture and how the families viewed children. And this is what I knew, Neil. I knew that they cared for their kids so much. They were like jewels, that babies were precious to them. So what I did was I changed my language. My language was all about I and me. Mm-hmm. I was saying things like, I've got to get this adoption completed. I need you to sign this. You need to sign my document. You need to help me complete my adoption. It didn't work. But when I turned it and I started talking to him in things that were valuable to him, it changed. I said things like, this beautiful Haitian baby is in an orphanage. This beautiful Haitian baby does not have a home. She doesn't have financial resources. She doesn't have a guarantee of love or a guarantee of education. And I know she matters to you. I will be that person if you will sign this document for me. And he did. Within 10 minutes, it was signed and I was out of there. And walking back, reflecting like, what happened? What I understood then was, you know, I was so used to manipulating. I was so used to forcing things to happen the way that I wanted them to happen, to twist arms, to make things happen, no matter what the cause. And when I was here in this whole other culture, it didn't work. And I fell flat on my face. And that's when I had to understand, what is manipulation? What does that mean? And what is persuasion? What does that mean? And how are they different?
Well, just from your story, I'm going to take a stab at answering that question. I would say that manipulation is trying to get somebody to do something against their interests, whereas persuasion is trying to show someone that your objective is, in fact, in their best interest.
That's exactly what I learned through the experience with this adoption. Yeah. Manipulation, you know, meaning to control or to influence a person or a situation, and to do it cleverly, to do it unfairly. Now, it is similar to persuasion in that we're seeking to move people, right? But we're doing it for our own good. We're doing it for our own benefit, what serves us well. Now, let's contrast that with persuasion. And persuasion means to call someone to do something through reasoning or argument. And this is the pure sense of the word argument. This isn't what we do at Thanksgiving, talking about politics and religion, right? This is when two people really express what's important to them, what they're after. They have this genuine conversation. Sure, it can get a little warm at times, but both sides are saying what's important to them. And then over time, we cause the other person to believe something, especially after a sustained effort, and provided sound reasoning, to the point that they accept it for themselves, that this is the best path for them as well. And when I'm working with clients or negotiating contracts for my speaking gigs, I look for two magical words to know if I persuaded or if I manipulated. And those two words are, that's right. And sometimes it comes out in different forms. But when people say, hey, Jeff, that's right. Your company could fix this gap for us. Jeff, you could solve this problem that we're facing here. Jeff, you do have the solution. Jeff, you are the right person to come on stage. What I know at that point is they've adopted my mindset. They've adopted my reasoning. They own it for themselves, and they want it just as much as I want it. Now we can move forward.
When in my earlier career, I did a lot of personal injury law and family law. And both of those practice areas have facets that lend themselves particularly well to this concept. In personal injury, we would do a lot, particularly in one jurisdiction here, you would have to submit to mediation. And you would try, the objective was to try and settle the case through mediation. Family law, we also do a lot of settlements, trying to get both parties to settle the case. And I used to always tell my clients in both scenarios that mediation or settlement was really a fancy word for everybody loses a little bit so that everybody can win a lot. And
I love it.
And I think this is indicative of what you're saying, is that you got to get to a point where it's a win-win for everybody. Because if it's a lopsided situation, if one side is prevailing over the other, it's largely a doomed endeavor.
Absolutely. And in fact, in one of the chapters that I have on positioning your message so that people say yes, I talk about binary versus non-binary options, which is exactly to your point here. Sometimes when we go into these discussions, or even when I go into negotiate speaking contracts, I could be black or white, yes or no, right, left, one or two, when often if I'm a bit more creative in my thinking and I'm a bit more open to explore like where their limitations are, what's important to them, what's not important to them, what matters, what doesn't matter. And part of that is, of course, through listening and asking questions. But when I reach that point and I toss aside that if I don't necessarily have to have a binary option, I can find a lot more happy places and places I can move forward through non-binary options.
Yeah, and I think attorneys in particular are notorious, and I speak from experience here, of only operating in the I win, you lose binary, as you say, mentality. And that's really the objective of what they're trying to do, is to jealously advocate on behalf of their client to the point where the outcome is I win, you lose, instead of, as you say, that's right. You know, we all lose a little, but we all in an effort to win together. And it's a lesson I think we should learn. We should spend more effort to try and learn.
I love that in negotiating with clients. Well, I don't want to walk out of a negotiation with a client and get a contract signed, even if it means more money, and have them walking away feeling like I'm taking too much from them.
Yeah, I got snookered here.
Yes, exactly. I want them to walk out of and sign this document like we're on the same page, and I want them to want it even more than I want them to like not. They're so excited to write the check. They can't wait to get started because they know we're going to do great things together.
What are some of the obstacles that you see when you're trying to get this concept across to people who are asking for the assistance to learn how to unleash their superpower? What obstacles are they, generally speaking, having to overcome?
Let's walk through a couple of the chapters here in the book, and I think we'll highlight and answer your question.
Okay.
The beginning of the book, after talking about the adoption and talking about manipulation, I talk about crafting a simple message. I think this is oftentimes where we miss it early on in our conversation, is in crafting this simple message. We have like all these concepts that are going on, and you know, in the public affairs work that I do, like working with lobbyists, it's never simple. Like, I'll admit that it's not simple. But when I need to build a grassroots campaign and pull lots of people on board to where we're going, I have to simplify this message in such a way that my audience understands it. And Albert Einstein said it this way. He said, if you can't explain something simply, you don't know enough about it. So how do we distill this message down? And I typically do this in like four steps here. First of all, of like debriefing myself. What is it I'm trying to say? I love whiteboards and I love legal pads. Those are just like, I can get everything out. But I debrief myself. From my head, and maybe I'm different than others, but for me, it's like ping pong balls that are bouncing around, and I have all these aspects and all these nuances. So I get it all out there. And then I like to have, when we're working with this one, clients on their messaging too. Like, what problem does this solve? What are we fixing? What are we solving by this? And then looking there at what's all there, to begin to ask, okay, what is crucial in this? What is necessary to say? And then strike everything else. I also work through things like removing internally or generally unknown jargon as well. Anything that can create a barrier between me and my audience. And it works. I mean, Neil, it's great. Like when people ask me, Jeff, what do you do for a living? I simply say this. I say, I speak professionally. And Neil, almost without exception, they come back and they say, what do you speak about, Jeff?
Yeah.
And then I'll say, hey, I speak on persuasive communications. And they'll come back to me and they'll say, oh, so you teach people how to manipulate for a living. Mm-hmm. And then I can have fun with them, you know, just dissecting all this. But my point here is, like, I begin with the very simple levels of communication that puts enough out there that I whet their appetite for the next thing. So instead of me bombarding them with too much language, I'm whetting their appetite. So they're coming to me asking me for the next level of information.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Hey, law entrepreneurs, let me welcome our newest of sponsors here on the show, and that's the great folks at Simple Contacts. You know, I love when I discover companies that solve for those pesky tasks or problems we all have. And one that I tried recently is called Simple Contacts, and it's a total game changer for anyone who wears contact lenses. I wear contact lenses. I had LASIK surgery before, but it didn't really do well for one eye. So I wear contact lenses in one eye only. If you wear contacts, then you know how annoying it is to have to get a prescription year after year just to be able to go buy more contacts. And you always seem to run out of lenses right before a big event like a vacation or a wedding, right? Well, Simple Contacts is changing all that by using technology, which, you know, I love, to make renewing your prescription and buying contacts super, well, super simple. Here's how it works. Using your phone or computer, you can take the Simple Contacts vision test in 5 minutes from literally anywhere, your couch, your office, the airport. And then a real doctor reviews your test in 24 hours. And if your vision hasn't changed, that's the whole reason for doing this, they write you a new prescription. And boom, a fresh supply of your brand of lenses is on the way to your door. There's no more appointments, no more waiting rooms, no more overpaying. Simple Contacts brings the doctor's office to wherever you are, whenever you need it, so you can skip the office visit, but not the care. If you have an unexpired prescription, just upload a photo of it or your doctor's info and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. And like I said, you know, I have just used the one lens and I need it for driving, and oftentimes, you know, I've run out of lenses and then, you know, I have to make an appointment. Sometimes I can't get an appointment right away. And then I have to deal with my glasses in the car. And it's just a hassle. If I could do it online, it would solve everything. And so when I found these folks here at Simple Contacts and checked them out, I was thrilled at how well this works. This is really vision care for the 21st century. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses at amazing prices. The prescription is just $20. The contact lens prices themselves are unbeatable, and there are never any hidden fees, and shipping is free. I mean, come on. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first Simple Contacts order. So to save $20 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/TLE. Or enter the code TLE at checkout and you'll save yourself $20. I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for, you know, periodic full eye health examinations. You still need those, but it is the most convenient way to renew the prescription. And as long as your prescription hasn't changed, you can then reorder your contacts right away. So again, check out Simple Contacts and get $20 off by going to simplecontacts.com/TLE. Or just enter the code TLE at checkout and give them a try, and you can thank me later. I love them, and I'm sure you're going to feel the same way. Simple Contacts, welcome We appreciate your sponsorship. We oftentimes hear that, you got to craft your elevator speech. You have to be able to tell your listener, what it is you do or what it is you're seeking to do in the time it takes to take an elevator, from one floor to wherever. And my sense of that is I can always tell when somebody's giving me an elevator speech because I've kind of tuned out like two sentences in or maybe one sentence in. And I realize I'm being, I'm getting the elevator speech. So I think it's really interesting. You keep it down to a couple of words. What do you do for a living? I talk for a living.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Used to, we would write paragraphs, we'd write pages. Yeah. But when we work on content for our clients, we literally have to go word for word for word. And our attention spans, too, are that short. I have a chapter on helping people understand, how do you capture their attention early? What are some techniques in that? But the messaging has to be so concise that it's said, and things that we can do to give visual impact as well are extremely important. But what we don't want to do is bombard them with so much language that they're just like what you experience in the elevator. I don't want to talk to you for the 30 seconds. Right. I want to talk to you for 3 seconds.
Right.
And you know what, Neil? I want you to talk to me for the next 5 seconds. Now I can hear what's important to you.
Yeah. A 30-second speech spoken at me as opposed to a 3 to 5 second conversation with me makes all the difference in the world. I had a law professor one time who said, never say with 20 words that which you could say with 5.
Exactly. That's why I say, strike everything else. Ask yourself what's crucial, strike everything else. And even with elevator pitches, I encourage people like to talk about, what problem do you solve? Kind of like I talked about here in the second step. What is it that you fix? How do you make life better for people? And that's a way that you can keep it very simple, but get people asking you for the next part of the information.
How do you address then the question or the comment when people say to you, Jeff, I'm not really good speaking in front of people or giving speeches or actually just having a conversation. I'm really much better with my head down, my pencil to the pad of paper. I'm not sure I can get to where you want me to get.
I think that's a great place to be. I would rather have that type of person than someone that enjoys talking too much.
Yeah.
If you're more of a heads down, I can help you so much better create a very concise message that you're comfortable with, that you're happy with, and I'll be less concerned that you're too verbose and you're speaking too much out there. We do the same type when we're working with our political clients when they're out speaking. We pull this stuff way in. The more you say, the more they can come back at you. So how do we keep it extremely simple? So give me somebody that likes their head down. That's my favorite person to talk to.
Yeah, I can bring them up successfully. It's the ones that always want to hear themselves talk and are very comfortable listening to themselves talk. It's hard to rein them in. Obviously the tools of the craft is language and being able to express yourself and then organizing that in a way that is persuasive. What are some of the other skills that you look for in becoming an artful persuader?
So in dealing with messaging, another area that I like to talk about and help people with is understanding how to make their message sticky. And here's what I mean by that. We probably all stepped out of our car to go to a meeting and taken that second, third step and found our heel sticking to the ground, only to realize there's a piece of gum there, right?
Sure.
It stays with us, right? So how do we craft language in such a way that it resonates with people, that it stays with them beyond our time with them? If you've had that elevator conversation with someone that we referenced earlier, what I want is 4 minutes, an hour, 2 hours the next day. I want things that you have said to resonate with them so that you are still top of mind. So how do you make it sticky? And we know there's some great examples of that. Things like how about this? Two words, and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Got milk?
Mm-hmm.
That has been used for 21 years. How about this one? Good to the last drop. Been used 97 years. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Been used for 43 years. So that's the value of messages being sticky. We can do that through repetition is a great way. Alliteration. One of the most brilliant uses of alliteration that I love to talk about is what Republicans used around the Affordable Care Act when they used the words repeal and replace. And people were repeating that. It was part of campaigns. It worked brilliantly. People love saying it. Why? It's alliteration. It's the R and the R, repeal and replace. Now, what's interesting is we didn't even have to define replace at all. That didn't even have to be said. All that had to be said was repeal and replace. So making sure that that the messaging is sticky, that it stays with them. After that elevator, I want them to be thinking about you tomorrow because of how you use language.
How do you guard against speaking in cliches then?
Well, I think that part of it is in understanding like how we're using the language, like where our intentions are, you know, how we're setting things forward. We can go to the side of the cliche, or we can have a bit more elevated, you know, more sophisticated right. approach to language, and avoid the like that slippery slope down cliches.
Yeah, because I know family member, close family member. Don't tell anybody, my brother, who at times falls into that cliche-ridden, conversation. And I can step back and say, mm-hmm. we just spoke for 5 minutes and there wasn't an original thought or idea. It was just, I hear that, mm-hmm. just these yeah. catchphrases that are a substitute for real conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is not at all what I'm advocating yeah. here in this types of conversation. I am advocating ways that it sticks with you, but in a very positive way, and hopefully takes you to a deeper level of conversations. One of the things I draw out in the book relating to content and getting the words out there is like an inverted funnel. Like what we're after is like saying a little bit, but making them to the point they'll ask you the question, right? And then you go to a deeper level mm-hmm. of understanding. And that prompts them to ask another question. You go to a deeper. So I'm not at all advocating like this Teflon cliche, like it slides off of me. What I am advocating for is something that opens up more authentic, genuine conversation with the people around you.
So that, what role does your body language, appearance, energy levels, what role does that play in the art of persuasion?
For me, I think it's huge. As I said, I speak professionally, and I look for three things when I get off the stage. And almost without exception, it falls into these three areas. The first one is around passion and energy. I believe we should be passionate and energetic about what we're talking about. When I'm on stage, and I know that if I can get through to you, if I can make a connection with you, if I can find a way to communicate my ideas to you in such a way that you can begin to understand it, that my passion and my energy can first bring you in. But that's not enough. It's almost like a little bit of fluff in there. The second thing that I look for is actionable content. Like when I walk away and come down off the stage, I want you to have two or three things that you can implement immediately. But then the third part of this is I want to make sure that to whatever degree you are comfortable, that I'm able to make a connection with you, to make an emotional connection, to find some type of bond with you. And I can do that through on the stage as well as like a one-on-one conversation. So yes, I think all of those, like the energy, the content, but also that heartfelt connection that we do genuinely care about the other person that we're speaking with is extremely important as well.
Well, I think it's key too. I mean, I had the experience, I went to a presentation that included Tony Robbins this summer. And it was on my bucket list to go to a Tony Robbins event. This was a minor event where he only spoke for a few hours as opposed to a few days. But I was a little bit put off by what I perceived to be kind of a fake enthusiasm, the rah-rah, clap your hands, get everybody up and energized, and it worked for a little while, but after a while it got to be repetitive and disingenuous to me.
No, and, I hear you 100%. I'm with you. I agree on that. And I have a chapter in my book on trust.
Trust, yeah.
And that is one of the things, like when I finished my book, my editor came back to me and said, Jeff, you've kind of talked about trust throughout the book, but you've never really just like hit this thing head on. How important is trust to you? And I said, are you kidding me? It's the foundation. Like mm-hmm. every single chapter in my book does not matter It is of no value whatsoever if I don't have the trust of my audience. And one of the points, I give 10 ways to build trust with your audience. And the third point there is exactly what you just said, is to be open and to be authentic. And especially as we're dealing with a younger millennial workforce, the millennial generation mm-hmm. that's coming in and taking over, it's extremely important to them as well. And you know, I don't know about your life, but like in my life, I've had barriers, I've had walls, I've had all types of stuff up in my life. I know what that feels like. I also know what it feels like when I put the guards down and I allow myself to be open and to be real with people and transparent with them. I know the connection that I can make with them, the connection of their heart, and again, not manipulating them, how I can persuade them because they see the real me. They know my intention.
And that's important for an attorney because, as a mentor of mine once said, you know, in general, we're talking about trying to reach potential clients. In general, the average John Q. public can't tell one attorney from another.
Mm-hmm.
But they get a profound sense of who they trust versus who they do not trust. And they're going to work with the ones that they feel they can trust. If they feel the attorney is a slick used car salesperson, not to disparage used car salespeople, because I'm sure there are absolutely great ones out there. But if that's the sense they get versus somebody that's genuine and, as you say, open and someone they could relate to, it's not even a contest.
That's exactly right. In fact, let me hit these. I'll hit these 10 real fast with you. Here's 10 ways that
sure.
I put in the book
awesome.
To build trust. First of all, is to be consistent, consistently deliver. The second one is then to deliver as promised. Whatever we say that we're going to deliver, that we do it, and we do it when we say that we're going to do it. The third one I already mentioned: be open and be authentic. Sometimes we feel like we have to be so professional, but from my experience, if we can be open with people, we can win them over. Show confidence that we know what we're talking about. We are the expert. We are the guru. We wrote the book on this, just like I wrote the book on persuasive communication. Show confidence. Be truthful with people. Number six, make people feel safe in our conversations. Number seven, say no sometimes. Sometimes we're wanting to bring on so much business and make so many things happen. We say yes, 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 yes. But sometimes it's better to say no, and that can instill confidence and make a referral to someone else. That can instill confidence in the person that they may come back to us for some other type of dealing. Be open to feedback. You know, I make mistakes all the time. I love the feedback. Bring it on. You know, make time for people. Have the time to really care for them. And the 10th one that I offer up is just to be reliable.
I got all of those. What about my shorthand technique here?
Woo! Go Neil.
Let me focus just for a minute on number four. Be confident and be known as an expert. One of the things in legal marketing we hear all the time is to one, niche down to a narrow type field, and two, become known in your community as the expert in that field. And I was when I saw that, I would say, okay, well, what do I do? Do I wave a magic wand and poof, I'm the expert? or do I just tout myself as the expert? But on all my marketing material, Neil's the expert in estate planning, expert estate planner. How, in terms of, you know, unleashing your superpower, can you go about establishing yourself as an expert in your community?
I love this question. I devoted a whole chapter to this question. And I love helping people in this space. The thing is, like, for most of us today, we don't have to have the mass. We don't have to have the broad. We can be very narrow. We can have our lane. And if I'm working with speakers or working with clients, I ask people, encourage them, choose your lane. Find your lane. So how do we do it? In the chapter on becoming an industry expert, I give you four tips for doing that. Is first of all, is to understand your skills. Like, what are you really good at? You know, I come from a communications background. My master's degree is in English. I come from a communications background. But what I'm really good at is persuasive communication, persuading people. So understand, you know, what it is. What is your skills? And then the second thing, and this takes work. This doesn't happen instantaneously. It takes time to go through and process this. But you need to figure out, people need to figure out who they are. And I use the word onlyness O-N-L-Y-N-E-S-S, onlyness. And that means what's unique to you, right? What are your passions? What spot do you occupy that others aren't occupying? What's your unique view there, point of view? What's your accumulated experience? What's your perspective? What's your vision? What's unique to you? And then find your audience, especially online. We can do that so easily today, and then create a dialogue. We just walked through this with a client of ours. He's a lobbyist, and he works in the healthcare space. He came out of state administration in the Department of Health and Human Services, right? That's his skill set. That's where he's really good. And here's what we found, Neil. We found in the state of North Carolina, where I live, that there wasn't a single source for all these companies that was wondering what's happening in this space. There's no single source for them to get all of their news. So we went and we found these people. We created a newsletter for this person, and he exhibits his thought leadership. And a lot of this is even just pulling together, curating content, not even creating all the content, but creating it, putting it out there, but staying extremely consistent to a very narrow brand.
It's interesting because I think a lot of times when people hear the phrase become the expert, become known as the expert, we think of the technical aspects of the law, you know, the A to Z of estate planning or family law or what have you. But what I'm hearing from you here is that you can be viewed as the expert by building on these four points: your skills, your onlyness, correctly identifying your audience, and tailoring your dialogue. That's how you become known as an expert.
That's right. So what we're talking about here is the public-facing, the forward-facing part of this expert. You know, we trust here that you know that side of the law, that's what you do. But in building this brand, it's from like that side of the law forward. Like, how do you project yourself? How do you brand yourself? How do you message yourself? Pulling all of that for the public side of the public's perception of what it is that you do. So that when I say the name Neil, what pops into someone's mind? What happened for me in talking on persuasive communications, it was interesting. Like earlier on in getting this message out there, people just started calling me Mr. Persuasion. And I've even trademarked that name now, Mr. Persuasion. I use it because it's the message I was giving, the clues out there, right? The brand is always held in the eyes of the audiences. So if you have an attorney that really wants to specialize in a particular area and be known in his area for that specialty, creating the brand around that and then reinforcing it over and over again, and it will stick.
Well, people do call me a name, but it's not nearly as nice as Mr. Persuasion. Jeff, the book comes out in the new year. Again, it's called Unleashing Your Superpower. What's the subtitle?
Why Persuasive Communication is the Only Force You Will Ever Need.
And I'm assuming we can get it at all our standard locations for buying
Absolutely.
Books.
Absolutely. And Amazon as well.
And what, you know, if our audience wants to reach out to you and follow up with some of this conversation, what's the best way to do that?
You know, a very easy way to do that is simply to text the word persuade to 66866. Persuade 66866. And what will happen is instantaneously, you'll get a free chapter from my book. It's a chapter on crafting a simple message. So that'll come to your inbox. You'll have all my contact information as well. So I'll give you some value as you reach out to me.
So persuade at 66866.
That's all it takes.
Well,
and we'll be connected.
I'm hoping that a lot of our audience does exactly that. And I see also that you do some seminars and some classes and some things like that. So our audience can look that up and see if that's something they want to take advantage of. Whereabouts in North Carolina are you located?
I'm in the capital city of Raleigh.
And down in Raleigh. Okay, very good. All right, Jeff, thanks ever so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Time.
Oh, I've had a great time. You take care now.
You too.
Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur and welcome our newest sponsor, Simple Contacts. They, along with our old friends at Spotlight Branding, as well as Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and Ruby Receptionists, are the ones that make this podcast possible. And for them, I am very grateful. So please be sure to visit their websites. You can find the locations in the show notes for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. Or you can go to our website, thelawentrepreneur.com, and navigate to the resources page, and there you can find a way to get to each of their websites. So please visit their websites, sign on as clients. I'm a client now of all three, and I think you'll be happy you did so. So that's Ruby Receptionist, Spotlight Branding, and Market Circle, the makers of Daylight.